early Sunday morning. The sun is coming up. I'm on the tee at 7. I'm here to try my luck. They say this game's a tough one, but I'll give it my best shot. Though the bunkers look like beaches and the greens like parking lots. Oh, Lord.
Hello and welcome to round 7 of the Film Soccer Film Club. Round 7, guys, can you believe that?
No.
Wow, the excitement and the thrill in her voice is just amazing. I can't wait to get into this one. So round 7 was down to Mark again.
So following on from the last round, which was Richard's Racing Car Bonanza, I decided to keep the sporting theme and go for film starring or having a connection with Kevin Costner. The thing is, I could only find two that I thought people probably wouldn't have seen, and they were Tin Cup and All About the Game. And by the time I got to the third one, decided to go off on a tangent and pick the very cheaply made horror film Blood Feast. So we put it to the vote, and Tin Cup won. And that's what we're going to watch this time. So it's made in 1996, I think. And it's essentially a love story. So it's a rom-com for the first time. And it's based around golf. And Kevin Costner plays Roy McAvoy. And the supporting cast are Rennie Russo and Don Johnson, with a couple of star turns from both Cheech Marin and Linda Hart. Simple as that.
Well, and I'm quite surprised why you chose Blood Feast, because actually, so I get why you were trying to choose films that people probably hadn't seen before. But there's quite a few sporting ones of Costner, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, a couple of the other ones like Bull Durham and stuff like that, he's pretty widely known for.
Yeah.
There's a cycling one really early on in his career. I was going to pick that, but apparently it's a nightmare to find on DVD.
Oh, my Lord. I know exactly what you mean now. That's just coming straight back in my head. I seem to remember they're road cyclists, and there's I've just got this vision of the scenes like Tour de France, but in America.
That's right, yeah.
I can't
have no
recollection of what happened apart from a few accidents.
Yeah, that's it.
What was that?
I can't remember what it was. Was it Blue something or other? I really can't remember.
Great.
Crap, it's going to bug me now. There you go, American Flyers 1985.
Ah, yes. That was it. So, John Badham.
Yeah.
Ridong Chong. Oh, wow. Jennifer Grey. Anyway, tangent. That's quite cool.
Yeah, there you go.
That would have been really good to see, but you didn't choose that, and we didn't vote for it. We voted for Tin Cup. Actually, Stephen, why did you vote for Tin Cup?
It seemed the best of the three. I'm trying to think. Well, Blood Feast, it was really like some very cheap 60s
film. Yeah.
And All About the Game. That was the baseball one. Was that the one where... It was one game remaining and the season was already over. It just didn't seem very exciting from a sporting point of view, so I chose Tin Cup.
Yeah, I think for me, the third choice baffled me, but the baseball one, I thought, he's done a few. And I hadn't seen Tin Cup before, so I was kind of curious. Although I did have this feeling it was just going to be a kind of sad, play-by-the-numbers romantic comedy, which actually it didn't turn out to be.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I went in with it, you know, expecting not a fat lot, and instead I got a film which I sat down, laughed, enjoyed, and on a couple of occasions thought the Kevin Costner character, as I said in my mind, I went, what a dick. But, you know, I thought it was a really good movie.
I thought that was a really good and quite bold move by Kevin Costner, because I hated that character. There were times in the first half, there were times throughout the whole film actually, but mainly in the first half, where I was just going, I felt myself screwing up my face and almost saying, you idiot, you know, I don't like you at all. But that was a hook that was getting me into the film and thinking, I was almost kind of wanting him to get his comeuppance in some ways. Because he is, and I don't think I've ever seen him play a thoroughly unlikable character like that, apart from, you know, playing the body of a piece or something.
I don't think he was that unlikable, yeah, maybe, but, he wasn't an overtly nasty character. He was just a bit of an arse.
Yeah.
And I think that added to the film as a whole, really. Because as you say, that is the hook that draws you in, isn't it?
Mm.
And you can't get, what's he going to do next? You know, well, then you see his house, and he's talking about the spa outside, and it's a paddling pool and stuff like that. I thought it was just brilliant.
Yeah, I did like his character for that. But the start, I find it hard to get into at the start, because I didn't really know. Actually, it's interesting. I'm just thinking about that. I wonder if it's my perception that Kevin Costner should be playing a type of character. So to see him playing this kind of character, I wasn't comfortable with it to start with. And so
I loved the start. I mean, I thought the start was really good. From the opening scenes of, New Mexico way?
Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it?
Somewhere Mexican border type, and it was with those, whatever.
Armadillos.
Armadillos, that's right. And in fact, the place was called Armadillo, wasn't it?
No, was it Salamaine? Texas.
Yeah.
Texas, yeah. But and the music at the beginning was fantastic, and it set the whole scene of where he lived, what it was like, how vast where he lived was.
Oh yeah, those opening montage shots was great. No, sorry, I was talking about when the characters are. But yeah, you're right. That I really like that opening sequence.
Mm. I thought, as Stephen said, the soundtrack added to it. You know, that guitar music was kind of, you know, quite different, quite downplayed, and it really set the scene nicely.
Mm.
And then I don't know which characters you see first, but I think it's kind of, is it Costner and Cheech Martin that come in?
Costner's out playing by himself, isn't he? And the guys are around betting on the flies going in the fly killer.
That's it, yeah.
And I was just like, what the hell am I watching? And I think as it went on, and I wasn't liking the character of Costner, I wasn't immediately into him and thinking he's playing a normal character, I was kind of a bit lost for a few moments. I was thinking, maybe I'm just not getting this, maybe this isn't right, but it... Actually, it turns out that's the way I'm supposed to be, I think.
I think when I saw Cheech Martin, that's when I felt a bit down, because I've never been a big fan of Cheech Martin. And as soon as I thought, oh, no, he's in it, he turned out to be the most likeable character for me in the end. But at the beginning, when I saw him, I thought, not another Cheech Martin film.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you for one of the first times ever. I don't like him. I really don't like him. But actually, here he really acted well. He played a down-to-earth character. He felt natural throughout.
Yeah.
And
everything that happens in the film, it was me. It was Cheech Martin doing it. And I thought, it's just so unusual from normal Cheech Martin. I can't watch them. But I really liked him in this one.
We'll find two characters that are kind of twisted in their head now, aren't they?
I think he's quite good, though. You know, apart from obviously Cheech and Chong films, which are just crap anyway, but I don't think he's a bad actor. But the thing I liked about this is all the decent dialogue wasn't said by Costner; it came from either Cheech Marin playing the kind of caddy character, or Linda Hart, his kind of ex-stripper girlfriend.
Mm.
And I thought that worked really well.
Yeah.
So
I said, have we actually gone over the entire plot? I don't think we've even touched on the plot, have we?
No, not really.
Well, take it away, Mark.
So the plot essentially is there's a driving range in Texas which is run by the Kevin Costner character, who's called Roy McAvoy. His nickname is Tin Cub. And working with him is a guy called Romeo, played by Cheech. And essentially what it's about is this woman turns up for a golfing lesson, which is played by Renee Russo, and she provides the love interest. And she plays a psychologist called Dr. Griswold, which reminded me of...
Pretty in Pink?
No. Absolutely not Pretty in Pink. National Lampoon's Vacation, because they were the Griswolds, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of Molly.
Yeah, there you go then. And her boyfriend is played by Don Johnson, who's a professional golfer called David Sims. And it's about, essentially, the storyline is about Kevin Costner trying to win the heart of Dr. Griswold and win her away from David Sims. And it's a pretty standard storyline, but what I liked about the film is the way it's delivered. because it's delivered pretty well and in a pretty novel scenario, I thought anyway. So there you go.
Yeah, and I think there's something else about it is if you forget the fact he decides one way to impress her is by going and entering the US Open and winning it. If you forget that bit, because that's a bit, we're not going so much out of this world, but that's the stretch. There's quite a lot of realism in it, particularly the characters. I don't think
he went into the Open was out of, because he was a fantastic golfer. He just had this flaw to his character.
Psychologically.
Stopped him ever entering the Open, and he fixed this flaw, allegedly. And so going in the Open made sense. It's just, once he got there, it lost it all again for me as a film.
It did become a film of two halves, didn't it?
It wasn't the getting there that I found daft. It was what he does once he gets there.
There's kind of there's maybe another plot going through here, not a plot, there's another moral line going through the whole film. And that's maybe about the whole idea that he can't change who he is and he can't change his flaws. And he tries to change. And when he's presented with those situations that cause him to just mess up every time, who he is gets the better of him and it just takes over and he does the same thing again, even though he's really trying not to and everything's hinging on it. He's just doing it again and again, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's the arc of the character, isn't it? That he is an arse. And, you know, people can change the behaviours up to a certain point, but there always come a time when you just can't do it. And I think that's what the film was about. Yeah. So he managed to rein it in, but in the end, you know, he absolutely just couldn't.
He is.
Yeah, and I thought that was actually one of the most realistic parts of the film.
Yeah, I did enjoy that, actually, the fact that it didn't, so obviously people are going to have seen this, so we can probably talk about it, but we didn't get to that crucial point of the film, and suddenly it's roses falling from the sky, and lovely music, and the cup's within his grasp, and he makes the winning shot, and everything's wonderful. It's not like that, it's a bit more realistic.
Yeah, and apparently, and I only kind of found this out afterwards, after kind of watching the film, that apparently is based on a real incident. And you know, the commentator in it, there's a commentator played by a guy called Gary McCord, who's got a really nice handlebar moustache.
Oh, and yes.
He apparently was the golfer that it happened to. So, wow. Saying it's far-fetched, it may be, but, you know, it is real life.
So that we're talking about that scene where he fluffs the shot into the water.
Yeah,
when he throws the Open away.
Yeah, that's right, and that's what Gary McCord did in real life.
Taking that drop shot and then and then going for par, he just keeps playing the shot until he gets it right.
Yeah.
Wow. How could somebody be so idiotic in real life?
I don't think he did it for the winning the Open. I think it was just a hole he kept going at, rather than. Could win the Open, but I'll take 12 shots trying to prove I can get it on the green.
I've just thought of a whole another connotation to what you said, Stephen.
What did I say?
And I just thought, oh, it's another moral of the story, is that really his plot line, he's trying to get into the hole and he just can't make it.
Well,
welcome back to primary school.
Couldn't help that one. It just popped in. Did you say Ardon? Anyway, suddenly do feel like I'm back at school.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so we're trying to get back on track.
Yes.
Oh, dear. I can't do it. Right, come on.
I normally mute myself between chats, but I think I should mute Richard between chats.
Between chats.
It's all gone.
Oh, dear. Oh.
Between chats. That is really hard to say.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay. So, getting back on track. What was the last thing we're talking about before the plot thing?
12 shots into the hole, that's what got you going.
So, yes, Stephen, you were about to talk about Don Johnson.
Yeah, before we do, that ending,
Yes.
It seemed to come across as though he'd succeeded when he failed and failed and failed and then got it on the hall and he got the girl at the end. And that was all wrong. I mean, what he did was daft and he became the arse that he was throughout. And I wasn't sure why he suddenly seemed to be the hero again, as though what he'd done was right. I couldn't get that idea that we should be liking him. He'd screwed up and yet everybody's cheering. They all think he's fantastic. Talk about he'll be remembered forever. Yet none of us remember McCourt, who did it in real life. And nobody will remember this guy either.
Yeah, but it's the same principle as, you know, a load of sports films, isn't it? Well, I say sports films. You know, but stuff like Cool Runnings, it's not about the person who wins. It's about the people who you know, dare to be different or dare to commit or something like that. I think that's what it's about.
So, yeah, it's about the underdog and the triumph over adversity.
Yeah, but there was none of that. He wasn't the underdog and there was no adversity. The adversity was himself and he never really got over that unless proving that eventually I'll make the hole was what he was trying to do.
Well, I thought that's what it became. The whole idea of the open just fell out the window at that point. It was about that hole.
Yeah, and it was about proving to, you know, David Sims that he could make it. And it is about being daring and different.
Yeah, that's a good segue onto Don Johnson's character, though, and McAvoy proving that, to, as you said, the guy that he could get it on the whole. But I think early on in the film, Don Johnson's character had said, you'll throw it all away. And he did. So in a way, he proved Johnson's character right, rather than disproving that he could make that shot. I don't think Johnson ever thought he couldn't make the shot. Johnson always said, you can't lay up. You can't lay up and take the easy shot. So I think Johnson was the character that was right in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Because then he would have won the Open.
Yeah, and Johnson said, you won't do it.
And yeah, is it about winning the Open or is it about getting the girl and the redemption of his character? You know, I think winning the Open is almost, it's almost irrelevant in that situation, isn't it? Because at the end, it is a rom-com and it's a love story and he gets the girl.
But would he have lost the girl by winning the Open? And did he really redeem himself by going back to his own character trait flaw and just repeating it until finally he got over it? Well, he didn't even get over it. He just repeated it until one of his shots got onto the green, and that was that.
Yeah. And even winning the girl, I mean, the girl already had a man, and we're forced to not like Don Johnson's character. He's the bad guy, and I don't think, although there's a particular scene where, because they go on about how he's not a very nice guy and he's mean to kids and he doesn't
like dogs. Staffs.
And yet there's one scene where there's a young kid comes up and asks for an autograph and he's mean. But apart from that, he's not a bad guy.
Oh, but wait a minute. He's not just mean.
For us to dislike him.
He's also mean while he's smoking. And that's the first time you see him smoking in the whole film.
Does he?
Yeah,
he does.
What was that? And I was like, why is he suddenly an... Oh, that's because he's an evil character. He has to smoke. that actually, in that whole section, when he does smoke, and he does turn around to the kid and says, get out of my face. Ah, I just thought, you know, that is quite cheesy. That is quite ticking all the boxes that the studio exec wants to see ticked, you know?
Yeah, we've got to approve of this girlfriend snatching loser who screws up at the end. We've got to be happy that he gets the girl, and that way is Johnson's mean to kids, doesn't sign autographs, and no, he smokes as well. So. And I mean, all his points. I always sensed that he was trying to get McAvoy to do well. That he always seemed. He always wanted him to do well. The bets, he always gave him opportunities. You know, the bet where he lost his car, where McAvoy said, I can hit this farther than you.
That was quite a good lesson to teach him.
Yeah, and he wasn't doing it because he was a bad guy. He gave him plenty of opportunities to, let's not do this.
Yeah.
And then he showed him what it was. And so I had trouble with the way they portrayed Don Johnson's character.
In the end. Because
if the story was about getting the girl, I think it was done not in a good way. I think they forced it down as to not like Don Johnson.
Yeah. Well, in the end, he did. But I think for the main part, his character was quite good.
Well, no, I liked the character. I liked his character. And most of them I enjoyed as characters. I just thought a lot of it was forced onto us.
Mm.
I think that the whole kind of Don Johnson thing, I think he just came across as a bit of an arse. Not particularly unlikable, but, you know, just a bit of a... He was just a bit cutting towards Tim Cook, you know, some of his remarks and some of the conversations and stuff. And I think that's all it takes, because at the end of the day, there's two characters there who are very similar in ability, but it's the temperament that's made the difference, isn't it? And as I was watching it, I was thinking, you could almost kind of flip the two characters around and you wouldn't really notice the difference.
Yeah, you mean the one that always lays up is the one that never got it, and the one that always took the chance wins. Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, to be fair, for all that stereotypicalness of the ending for Don Johnson's character, there's a lot of non-stereotypical things happening in the film, like the fact that we just talked about those two characters. It's kind of the other way around than you would expect.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because in a normal sports film or any sort of film like this, it would be the one that takes the risk that would be the one winning. Or would it? Have I just talked myself out of that?
Yeah, because the one that took the risk in the end was...
Was always the one failing.
Decided to go for the big shot rather than the Open, so he could get the girl, I suppose.
Yeah, he lost the Open, didn't he, but won the prize, and the prize was the girl, not the Open. So, you know.
Hmm. I just think you could have got the girl and the Open. Lay up. Every time I watch it, I'll scream, lay up. No way. You're going to keep going over.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's what makes it so painful. The fact that you sat there with your head in your hands along with Sims, who stood opposite him going, God, what a dick. And I sat there watching it through the gaps in my fingers thinking, he's just gone mental.
It was a long film.
And isn't that a good thing for it to do, though? Again, yeah. I always talk about this. A film has to affect the audience in some way. You have to be engaged in it in some way other than just sitting watching it and then going out of the cinema, walking home, thinking what I'm going to have for my tea. I always use that line. But you've got to. A film, to be successful, has to engage you some way. So either engaged in the cinema or you're walking home thinking about it. And I think that does both of them. It ticks both those boxes for that very scene. Because I too was sitting there, even though I think it's insane, I was sitting there going, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I got caught up in that as well, caught up in that whole scene.
Yeah, I'd agree with that sentiment. I've only seen it kind of happen once before. And it was, we went to see Rear Window, you know, and they redid the print. Mm-hmm. And there was obviously a guy in the cinema who hadn't seen it. Three quarters of the way through, he stood up and went, get away from the window. I felt like shouting at the telly, take the shot. it's the same thing. You do get involved. You do buy into that character. And it for me, that's why it works really, really well as a film.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's happened with all three of us, even though, Stephen, you saying you didn't like it. It had an effect on you.
No, I didn't like the ending. I mean, the film, like you say, you felt as you were watching it, and it was a long film, and you won't know that watching it. It wasn't a film. You wouldn't believe that a rom-com could be over 2 hours long and you not notice it.
Yeah.
You generally, in 20 minutes, you're thinking, my God, how long has this got to go? And you don't think that with this. But I didn't like the ending. I've said it nothing now, but lay up. That will be my two-word review, lay
up. That's what you're shouting at the scriptwriter. And what about, so we've talked about Dawn, we've talked about Kev.
What about the guys, his posse? I mean, I weren't quite sure why we had them in it. We don't know why they were following him. They seemed to turn up to force a bit of comedy. Yeah. You know, his little posse had at the beginning and they turn up at the end of the Open.
Yeah.
It
was nice at the end. It was nice when they popped into the cafe I can't remember what place it was, the restaurant, whatever. I remember them popping in there and felt that was a nice scene. But at the start, when they're looking through the blinds, when Molly and Roy are doing their lesson, I think that was another moment where I was going, what's this film going to be about? How's it going to go? I wasn't sure at that point. And I didn't understand why they were there either.
I think we're going to have to agree to disagree here, guys, because I think the posse was one of the best things about it.
Really?
Yeah, because, and, you know, you said, what are they doing looking through the blind? I'm sorry, but if it was the three of us out there and somebody else was giving a golf lesson to Renny Russo, wouldn't we be looking through the blinds too? I just thought it captured, you know, a group of blokes together really, really naturally. I thought the dialogue was really natural. And it's one of the best films I've seen that kind of just pictures a group of guys just chewing the fat and killing time.
So I wouldn't be interested at all, obviously, because I'm married. But
but they've not been there. I mean, they're there all the time. And we don't know why they're there all the time. They weren't just there to look at the woman. You know what I mean? I know what you mean by a group of guys together. But I never knew why they were with him.
Because they're his mates.
Yeah, there was, and we knew, like, Cheech Martin's character. We knew he was his daddy in college and he'd been with him through all his adversity. I just never felt, they never did anything with these characters.
Yeah, but did they actually need to? I don't know if they did. I think...
they didn't really need... I don't think they even needed to be there then. You know what I mean? I don't think they added to the film. I often thought, well, what are they doing now?
I thought they just brought a bit of humility to it, really, by showing, you know, it isn't only about one man. It's about... It affects all the other people who are around him, and it, you know, and they go on the journey with him. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed that. As far as the movie goes, as far as the dialogue goes, some really good dialogue came from it as well. So, and I thought maybe at times, you know, as you said, they were maybe kind of bringing the comedy along, but I thought on the whole they just added a bit of balance and a bit of foundation to it. But you can say that I'm speaking out my ass if you want, Stephen, because we quite frequently agree on our types of films.
Well, I mean, this is number 7. I spoke at my ass 6 times, so.
Look, we're all speaking out of our arses at some point in these things. So my overriding memory is of that opening scene of them and then the sort of reconciliation scene of them later on. But actually, they are peppered throughout the golfing in the second half.
They're there in the start as well, don't forget, when he's qualifying. They follow him around the qualifying matches, don't they?
Yeah.
Did they turn up in the qualifying? I can't remember. I remember them appearing at the Open, having spent an age getting there.
They do, because in the qualifying, isn't it, when him and Romeo fall out?
That's right, and the fat guy has to carry the clubs.
Yeah.
Does he not grab somebody? Oh, right, is that one of his posse?
Yeah.
I just thought he grabbed somebody out of the crowd for that particular...
No, that was later. That was the other one where David Sims does that, Don Johnson's character. He goes, because remember there's the bet, Tin Cup takes the bet when he's David Sims' caddy. He takes the bet, takes the shot, and David Sims like, right, that's it, you're right. He picks out a caddy from the crowd and fires him.
Mm.
Which is quite interesting as well, because that's going back to what you're saying about Don Johnson's character, trying to help him, but it felt like he was trying to help him, trying to give him a bit of purpose. And yeah, okay, he was making him a caddy, which is quite belittling. But at the same time, you know, there's kind of a lesson there to be learned. It's about not to be so impulsive and single-minded as the Tin Cup character seemed to be.
Yeah, but that's what the character is, isn't it? Just, you know, it's like a heat-seeking missile. He's got one mission and that's it.
To destroy himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seriously, yeah. I don't see him lasting with Molly in Tin Cup 2.
Electric Boogaloo. No, neither do I.
She moves about a lot anyway. I mean, it portrays her as entirely like she's a doctor, but she, from what I can gather, she hadn't been a doctor very long. She'd been a hell of a lot of different things before then. And she seemed to be a bit of a wanderer anyway.
Yeah. I think what it was trying to show was that she was this straight up, all sorted character. And then the more she was with Tin Cup, the more she realised that inside her was this kind of Tin Cup character. Just wanted to be impulsive and not be on the straight and narrow, and that was supposed to come out of her. But it kind of fell apart quite early when she started announcing that she wasn't a wasn't really a doctor, hadn't been a doctor for long. And it's all in one big speech as well, and her all insecurities and problems start falling out, and the character crumbles. Yeah, I didn't think she had a big part, really.
But, you know, she drove the script along, didn't she, when she needed it
Yeah. And there was a few nice, soft focus shots in her face that were... That always bugs me. They show the leading man in sharp focus, and they cut to her, the leading lady, and it's in soft focus, and they keep cutting back, and you're like, oh, come on.
They're just showing how dreamy she is, Richard. It's just your cynicism coming to the fore there.
If I want to see how dreamy she is, I'll watch...
Thomas Crown Affair.
Yes, well said. She's a good actress in that.
Very good.
Anyway. Yeah, Mark, you were wanting to talk, say something about the US Open itself.
I did. I'm really not a golf fan. I changed the channel to get away from it, but it had me absolutely riveted kind of watching this. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I don't know whether it's because of, you know, the characters or whatever, but I'd actually consider sitting down and watching a golf tournament now.
Yeah, I thought the golf was very good. I think it was because there was a big crowd there. You know how you'll see some big sporting events and they'll show a football ground, and you know that if the camera just moved back an inch, there'd be empty seats.
Yeah.
This looked like an open course that was full. Mm. And you could imagine that, even though you were looking at one hole, you could imagine that every other hole had lots of people watching golf going on. You sensed that it was part of an open and not following this little group around with the cameras.
Mm.
I think that added to the atmosphere. I remember thinking while I was watching that how, as with Grand Prix, the one before, the sport felt real. You didn't feel like it had been filmed for a film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it did feel like a lot of the actors themselves were taking shots. And I think it was the fact that actors were taking shots in amongst all these pros as well. Whether the shots turned out well or not, who knows? But, you know, it felt like they were actually doing it.
I can't remember how it, but Costner, I don't know who trained him, but he got a lot of training with his shots and his
swing. Yeah.
And he was supposedly very good. Mm. And I don't think Don Johnson's character was as good. But I'm sure they both took the shot. But there were a lot of professionals that were there as well. And there were a couple that had quite big speaky parts for who they were and what they were doing.
I mean, there were a ton of PGA Tour players on there.
There were loads, weren't there?
Not that I recognise any of them. Cause...
Not one. I'm just looking at the list now.
Yeah, certainly. And no freaking idea.
No. Lee Jansen? He might be famous. There you go.
Fred, look at that. There's a list here, and the one that had the biggest talking part, whether he's on the cast list instead, is... Sadler.
Oh, I recognise that name.
Yeah.
He's not on the list. No, maybe he's part of the cast because of...
Oh, maybe.
Occupants.
Yeah.
Do you know one of the things that got me engaged into the golf itself was the way it progressed the game so that you knew that where he was with the shots and where he was against other people, and you felt that the tension was building and it was getting closer and it was... He had a real shot at it, and that feeling built up through it, and it followed it well.
Mm. It's worth mentioning, isn't it, as well, that the first round that he shot was atrocious because he had a hangover from the night before.
Yeah.
And then kind of, you know, second round, all the other golfers start talking about him and asking who is he and how did he get there and stuff. And the folks that added that context were the commentators on the telly.
Yeah.
You know.
But he shot a 10 over on his first round and then
his
record on his second. And at that point, you sensed that as much as I didn't like him failing at the end, you sensed it was going to be one of these sports films where it turns out good and he wins. Because more often than not, you don't want them to win this big final game because they never do. And you sensed that was going to happen in this one.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying, is it's really, it was down to that building up of the game properly. You felt like it was progressing. You knew where the score was. You knew it was getting closer and closer, and you knew he could do it.
Yeah. I agree.
Stephen, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because we go back to Grand Prix, and I'm not going to have this argument again, but that was the problem with Grand Prix.
The Grand Prix audio.
Oh, here we go.
An extra hour because of this.
I was trying to get you in that trap, you see.
No.
No.
Different films.
It was the same thing, and I think it was handled a lot better here, is that it did build up, did escalate. You were going with the tension. Why did suspenders pop into my head?
Jesus, so golf
is a four-day affair. Formula One is months.
And yes. And so your point is, caller?
You don't need that. What's happening as much in Formula One?
It doesn't matter what the sport is. The reason it succeeded is it built that up. You knew where the player was. You knew the score. You knew it was getting closer. You knew round to round he was getting better. That was a big key for this, I think, that made the golf game so much more enjoyable. And to be fair, they had to do that because there's not much else they could fall back on if you didn't like golf.
No, I agree with that for this film, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with that, I've got to say, because I'm not particularly a huge golf fan. And that's kind of quite a sweeping statement. And that's like saying, you know, if you don't like boxing, you're not going to enjoy Rocky. But it's the actual story that kind of drives the characters along. And, you know, the change in the characters.
No, I didn't say that at all. I didn't say that at all. I said they had to concentrate more on the building up of the game and the progression through the matches. They had to concentrate on that more here in this film because golf's not as exciting to the general audience. I think that's fair to say. Whereas watching, for example, Grand Prix is much more exciting because it's fast cars and it's explosions and crashing. You're not getting that in Tin Cup, are you?
No, you're still getting Simonson Tin Cup. I mean, I think there's three views. I mean, I thought with the way that tournament went in 4 days, he fell apart, he got better with it, he set a record, and they kept the score going along. He had an idea where he was up to, what he needed to do. I don't think it was any more exciting for a non-golf fan would like. I don't think that it was golf they were playing mattered, just that you knew what was going on, you knew what it was doing. It could have been any sport.
That's what I was saying.
You just needed to know how it was getting along.
That's what I was saying. They had to concentrate on that more.
Mm.
I think we're saying the same thing again.
Oh, here we go. I'm not going to talk about Grand Prix again.
I'm not going to bring up every audio, just every second one.
Yeah, great.
Everyone
that's got a number in it. Yeah.
I'm sure when you edit it, you'll mention Grand Prix. You'll have found where me and Mark have said, "Oh yes, we agree," and it'll all come out good. But
no, why would I edit it to get you to agree with me?
That's true.
Because you're king of the world.
No, it's good when you disagree and you're wrong. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, because you're right.
Because it makes my rightness even righter. What were you saying about the US Open again?
I was saying that it worked. I thought it worked well. And the thing that worked well there was the soundtrack changed as well as how it was shot. It was, you know, lots of aerial shots and you know, I thought it was filmed really well. But the thing that I noticed was the classical music the first time you see the course.
Oh, that's interesting. I see you were talking about that earlier, and I can't remember. I can't remember the soundtrack, but I do remember how good the picture looked and how some of the framing was, even early on. It's some great shots of the courses.
Yeah. I think real golf when they show the Open, I'm pretty sure that when it comes on and they'll pan across the course that they play that kind of music. I think for me, who watches golf now and again, felt like it was an Open coming on as well. I think they've done it how they do film the Open.
Well, it felt like me playing Tiger Woods on the PlayStation 3. Because you always get those aerial shots. Sorry, I don't watch golf, so there you go.
Tiger Woods is very similar to how it's filmed, and this was very similar to how the Open.
Right. There you go, I didn't know that.
And I think that's why, again, the Open was really done well. And you felt like it. I don't know how they filmed it. I don't know if it was during a competition. I imagine it must have been.
Yeah, I don't know that either. There's no commentary track on it. And there's scant information on the interweb. But it looked like it, didn't it?
Yeah. But you definitely sense it was part of a big competition.
Yeah.
Do you think, like Grand Prix, that they actually did filming during an actual Open or an actual large golf competition?
Yeah, I don't think they'd have had crowds otherwise. You'd have had extras similar to Spartacus and Ben-Hur had it been a problem, because you felt like everyone... I mean, maybe they only used three courses, and they, I mean, three holds, and the angles they used made it look bigger, but...
What are you talking about? Having Roman gladiators on the golf course? What?
No, all the extras. The extras to give you that sense of an open... I'm saying it was real. I imagine it was. Because to get that many extras in...
Okay, I've got you. The budget for that. You mean those films have huge...
Ben-Hur and Spartacus have huge extras, yeah.
Yeah, I get you. I was wondering where you were going for a minute. I was a little confused. Yeah, actually, it's a good point. It probably was filmed at some golf competition.
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it? Mm. Especially with some of the, you know, because there were quite a few stands and stuff like that kicking around as well. So I'm guessing they must have done. But who knows?
Probably someone who likes golf a lot better than we do.
Because we know nothing about it, obviously, do we? Well,
Stephen knows some.
I like the behind the scenes, you know, where it showed the editing crew that were filming the Open. And they were choosing what shots to show. And you can imagine, because there's 20 games going on at one go, and they're having to show one hole and one person shot at a time. So while they're filming one guy, there's 17 other holes that they're missing. Mm. And it showed those editing guys saying, get what we're filming in for. And the more he failed, which is where I had a flaw with it, how he became the hero from that, but... Oh, the cameramen then thought, no, let's film in more. And the commentators got all excited about it as well. I think because I watched golf, that's probably why that ending annoyed me.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Right. There's something about the... all those things about how we love the underdog and we love it when people fail. You know, when people get too much success, we don't like them anymore and we want to tear them down. Tiger Woods. And then, you know, there's that kind of feel to it. So, I don't know, it's not quite the same, but that's what I'm kind of feeling about his character. That's probably why we're seeing the crowd and everybody get involved with him.
Yeah, but you can't tell me that if Tim Henman, not Tim Henman, who's that Scottish guy that thinks he's English? Is it Andy Murray?
The Scotsman who thinks he's English? What?
Yeah. Is it Andy Murray?
Why does he think he's English?
I don't know, because he plays for England, does he not?
No, he plays for Scotland.
Okay.
He plays for Britain.
That's it, Britain. Same thing.
Now that's what all English people say. God, some Scotsman's doing well. He's playing for Britain.
He's really Spanish. That's where he did all his training.
Well, isn't that football rules? You just have to be educated for some country for 5 years, and then you can play for that country.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes, stupid. Doesn't matter if you're born there or not. I'm going to do Open University in Spain for 5 years, and then I can play for Spain. Anyway,
there you go. But it's like if Andy Murray made it to the finals of Wimbledon, and then was beaten, it'd still be a great story, wouldn't it? He'd still be a hero.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be a great story if he has 20 match points and he decides for this last shot I'm going to hit that little point on the corner and he misses all 20 shots and because of it loses Wimbledon. And that is what Tim Cook did.
That's a very good point, actually. That's a very good comparison. And Mark, actually, when you said Nick Henman, and then describe the situation. That's exactly what happened with Nick Henman.
Tim Henman, isn't it?
Tim Henman.
It's his brother, Nick.
Yeah. No, he was the one that played in the 80s, played the piano, wasn't he? No,
that's
Kershaw.
That's Nick Kershaw.
Is he not a disc jockey?
Yeah, but that's what Tim... Oh, for God's sake. That's what Henman did. He would get to the semis and stuff like that and then fluff it totally in true British style. His game would just fall apart. But actually, Stephen, you hit the nail on the head there with what you said. It is exactly as though he would go for the same shot again and again, just lose it shot after shot after shot, and then lose the game.
Yeah, and we wouldn't cheer when he made that last one, even though we'd lost. We'd think, well, who's the knob?
Yeah. You can hear it now, actually. You could hear the crowd shouting at him as he left. It wouldn't be applause. All the rotten strawberries would be thrown at him.
Yeah.
But as a rom-com, which is what it was, I mean, he did get the girl and everybody loved him. And I think that's the ending was when it became a rom-com. Up until then, it never followed the normal conventions of a rom-com.
However, to be fair, at the very, very end, you know, they're still back in his little golf course and he's still in that awful little shack. Not much has changed in his life, apart from she's there.
Yeah, but, you know, he's got a shot at the Oprah, hasn't he? Yeah. That's made kind of pretty clear. She's going on tour with the guys and she's going on tour. So stuff has changed. It's just, you know, it's just the vacuum after the big competition, isn't it?
Is he going on tour? I didn't think...
Yeah, he's mentioned that, I think.
Yeah, he called it because of his good score. I mean,
he could qualify for next year. Scores.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought. They said... Because she goes, you could qualify, you know, by the way, because you know nothing about golf and I'm a psychiatrist and I know everything, with your score, you could qualify next year for the Open. And he goes, oh, can I? Yes, you can. Oh. So he's not, he wasn't planning going to tour at all. He was just like sitting there back to normal almost.
No, she says, I'm sure that she says he's on the tour because of the score.
Stephen? Hello, Stephen?
Hello.
Stephen, are you on mute? Have you passed out?
Should we call an ambulance?
Nah, <I'll stay.
laughs> So,
something happened to Stephen.
No. I bet he's re-watching the end of the film, you know.
Oh, maybe he is. I'm pretty sure she says it to him.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
Sorry,
I'm 100% sure anyway, but I'm not sure.
Mary Sackle turned the mute off.
I'm sorry, say that again, Stephen?
The battery went on, the Mary Sackle turned mute off.
Ah.
Welcome back.
Yeah. That was going so well. So, Stephen, what did you think? How do you think the ending was? Who said what to who about what? And when? And why?
He knew or didn't know.
Yeah, we're trying, because we've both got different opinions.
I don't know. I've got it on my PC. Do you want me to have a quick check?
Yeah, go and have a quick check.
Yeah, go on.
While I'm finding it, I did love the way Cheech Martin got his shot back. That is probably psychology.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Yeah, it was very good. I have to say that throughout the whole film, I thought the dialogue was really good because that's where a lot of the comedy came from.
And that brings me back. You're talking about the dialogue. It brings me back to just how cool I thought Kevin Costner was in this film. Because he wasn't playing a Kevin Costner character.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time I've seen him like that, to be honest.
No. Because you actually forget, don't you, just how good an actor he is sometimes. Yeah. Because he always plays Kevin Costner.
Absolutely. So, apart from No Way Out, which is the other role I just... Actually, no, there's two other roles I love. There's No Way Out and there's 13 Days.
13 Days is brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that because he is really good in that. No Way Out, is that where he's the Navy officer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good as well.
Awesome film, because it's got Gene Hackman in it as well.
That's right, yeah. Good film.
Just worship the ground that a guy walks on.
Yeah, awesome. Really good. Well, I thought the dialogue was great, and I thought some of Romeo's lines were fantastic, because there's one when Kevin Costner's talking about a defining moment, and if you don't grab it, and kind of gives a little kind of speech, and Romeo stands there and says, well, it was a defining moment, and the definition was shit. I thought that was just beautifully done. And it happened kind of a couple of times throughout where the two of them have kind of got that dialogue going. And it was their relationship that I really liked. And that's one of the things that I think, going back to kind of what made you buy in, it was kind of almost, you know, a rom-com between Kevin Costner and Cheech Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And I was just checking the writers of that. So one of the writers, John Norval, nothing else really to mention. Before Tin Cup. He was actually a golf consultant on the on the film. But it was really Ron Shelton who also directed. He is responsible for White Men Can't Jump, Dark Blue, Hollywood Homicide, Bull Durham. So you can kind of see some... Actually, I'm just going to check if he wrote those. So he wrote Bull Durham.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
White Men Can't Jump. The Great White Hype.
Oh, God.
Side. So you can actually see the dialogue in there. It's probably Shelton that's that's responsible for a lot of that dialogue.
Mm. Well, he would it shows, doesn't it? What?
I said he would be. He's a writer. But you can see that going through some of those films, actually.
Yeah.
I'd even say Bad Boys 2. But, oof.
I like Bad Boys. You've got nothing to apologise for. You're not talking to Stephen. He's saying he's going to win the argument, but...
There's never an argument on this.
I have it all lined up.
Oh, here we go.
Right, hit us.
Do you know that by finishing in the top 15 of the Open, you qualify to be in it next year?
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of you.
I accept PayPal, Richard, if you're interested.
Wait a minute. That was what I said.
No.
I said that she said to him, you'd qualify next year.
And he was like, that's what I said. That's what you...
Bollocks, did you? You were going on about he already knew, and she said she was on the tour already. He was on the tour already.
Yeah.
I said... She said to him, I can play it. Oh, I can't play it back, actually.
No, you can't play it back.
But I said that she said to him, you qualify for the Open next year. And he goes, oh, do I? Yeah.
I think you'll find I won that argument, Richard. I think either that or I'm an exceptionally bad loser. So we'll call it double up quiz.
Well, I think I'm probably right.
I mean, I do know I'm not going to pick a sports film next time.
Yeah, and we've done them to death, haven't we?
No, there's plenty more sports to come. I'm doing ping pong next.
Well, unless I can do water sports, I mean...
Whoa!
Hey! Easy tiger.
I'm going to pick a Kevin Costner film, like Waterworld.
Oh.
I say, what water sports could you pick? Genuine sports water played sports. In...
Water. Yes, I don't know. There's water skiing in Caddyshack.
There's nobody typing water sports into Google.
Google, no.
I think I'm doing it now, yeah.
I think we're all experienced people here. And I think typing anything like that into Google would be a mistake.
So I haven't got time to do it. I'll do it at work tomorrow.
That's why I'm going straight to Google. And actually, I shouldn't do that because my search history is recorded on Google. Let me sign out first.
Amazingly, 1941, there was a film called Water Sports by Disney. Diving, swimming, surfboard riding and water skiing are the topics in this technical shot.
Awesome. I typed in water sports to Google, hit I feel lucky, and I got a list of water sports from Wikipedia.
Oh, that's good.
Yep.
It's not the big blue. Is it the big blue? That's about diving, is it not?
The big blue, yeah. I honestly can't think of any more. Right, if anyone else can think of water sports in films, let me change that. Films based on sports that are based in water. Anybody can think of films like that, tell us. So you can get the most.
Yeah.
Because I think we've got two.
Three, Beyond Vanilla. Extremely well shot and edited film.
Beyond Vanilla?
It's Beyond Vanilla, yeah. 10 stars this guy gives it.
What's it about?
The kinkier side of sex.
Ah. That's not the water sports we were talking about. Anyway, so is that Tin Cup done?
I think so. Somebody said that Stephen wanted to talk about the moral of the story, I think.
I think they covered that throughout the guys. I felt like he'd won at the end, or I felt that we were meant to... feel like he'd won, and I felt like he'd thrown it all away. What was it that if we keep trying, we'll succeed? Because he didn't succeed.
Yeah, well, in a micro sort of way, he did. For that shot, he succeeded, but he lost the... Ooh! He succeeded in the smaller prize, but he lost the bigger goal.
Oh, no, I think he got the bigger goal and lost the smaller prize. I think the small prize was the Open.
I'd have said the big prize was the Open.
Maybe it's about it's never too late to chase a piece of skirt. I don't know. I think I get that wrong.
Lay up.
Yeah, lay up all the time.
I screamed it often in the last 10 minutes. Lay up. 12 shots, 12 screens of lay up.
Lay it off. Okay, so that is definitely us covered Tin Cup now. Thoroughly. I don't think there's an audio cast or even... There's not a group of people in the world that have covered Tin Cup so well as we just have. I think we got a hole in one in that one.
No, I think we took 12 shots on that halfway through. But
yeah, you just kept going.
Either way, I'll take the drop, so it makes no difference.
Oh, I'm just going to lay up, yeah. I will be after this. Anyway, so all that remains is to thank the guys that have joined us once again. And that is Mark Buckley.
Thank you very much.
And a plug.
For the website, which is markbuckleyphotography.co.uk, available to cover birthdays, weddings and bar mitzvahs.
I can't believe that it's round 7 and I still have to prompt you to...
I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
You should be straight in there. And then Stephen Orell.
It's a pleasure, again.
And you do have something to plug, Stephen.
I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do?
Yeah.
Mark Buckley Photography?
No.
No. Stephen Orell looking for work.
Oh, yeah. I'm unemployed now, so give me a job. I can do that. This gives a job. I can do that, yeah.
On your bike gives a job. What are you good at? What are your skills? Apart from, obviously, film criticism and arguing.
He mediated the argument between us two, so mediation's a good one.
Mediation, yeah, I've no real skills. I can blag my way through Excel. But,
Don't you do some web and some SQL stuff?
Web? No, SQL. I really blag my way through SQL.
Oh, you're just blowing it live.
But I can do web, I can do Excel, and there's something else I'm really good at. Any analyst role.
Oh dear, there's something else I'm good at, but I can't quite remember what it is. All right, thank you very much, guys, and I look forward to doing the next round with you. Take care, everybody.
Waggle it.
From the creator of Bull Durham and White Men Can't Jump.
A clubhead, was Waggle a club.
Comes a story.
As a pretty girl, has such an ugly swing.
About men and women and the games they play.
Remember, this game's about trust, touch, and letting go.
Hi, darling.
Hi, honey.
Oh, no, not him.
You got it bad, huh?
Something about that chick.
I take it to her feminist.
No one's ever saddled me with that one.
Well, you might try being saddled sometime. Smell of leather, sting of a whip.
Yeah! She must think I'm such a loser, lousy driving range pro.
Local legend Roy Tin Cup McAvoy, the best player to never hit the big time.
It's an easy game, this golf.
Wasn't going anywhere.
Oh. It's got to be the woman.
I thought you said it was a virus.
Well, a woman can have the same effect.
But ever since Dr. Molly Griswold got inside his head...
I think I'm in love with you.
What?
He's been changing his whole approach.
From the moment I first saw you, I knew I was through with bar girls and strippers and motorcycle chicks and
stunned, huh? Tell me you're not at least moderately attracted to me.
You have moments, Roy.
Yeah, well, you tell me which ones are my moments and I'll try and duplicate them. Just thinking about how to get in your heart. This could take all night.
Come on, you guys!
You're all nuts.
Yeah.
To the car!
Man, come on!